Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Hi, I'm Connie Whitman, your host, and you're listening to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Thanks so much for joining us today. So my motivational quote is by Jackie Joyner Kersee, and she says, "Age is no barrier. It's a limitation you put on your mind." Now, America's population is aging. People 65 and older will account for, and wait for the statistic, it's kind of cool, will account for some 20% of the population in 2030, up from 13% just back in 2000. Now, many economists are worried that an aging population will erode the economy's underlying dynamism, with too few young workers supporting too many dependent elderly. Now, my guest today, Chris Farrell, says nonsense to that. Chris and I are going to discuss his new book, Purpose and Paycheck, Finding Meaning, Money, and Happiness in the Second Half of Life, where he debunks this line of dismal thought with a wealth of research. Now, growing numbers of experienced entrepreneurs and older workers are staying engaged in the economy. Now, for instance, more than a quarter of all new businesses launched in recent years were started by 55 to 64-year-old age group, up from nearly 15% just two decades ago. Now, these experienced entrepreneurs are in the vanguard of what we're calling the unretirement revolution. Chris is currently senior economics contributor at Marketplace, America's public media's nationally syndicated public radio business and economic program. He's also economics commentator for Minnesota Public Radio and hosts its series Conversations on the Creative Economy, as well as a columnist for PBS, Next Avenue, and the Star Tribune. He's published 5 books on personal finance and the economy, including the most recent, which we're going to talk about today, Purpose and Paycheck. So, Chris, what a beautiful background you have, right? Your little bio there.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited about this topic because I'm in the aging population group.
You're in the demographic.
I'm right in there. So I'm curious. And as an entrepreneur, it's funny. I know myself, I'm going to finish writing a book any day now. And then I'm going to launch a digital product all about sales because that's my world. So for me, as an entrepreneur, I feel like I continue to have new ideas and, oh, I should do that. Or you read something and I could do that, and how I could spin my business to make different revenue streams. So I feel like I'm still relevant and vibrant, right?
Yes. And you would relate to the way I opened the book is this essay by John Kenneth Galbraith, the late economist. And he wrote it when he was 90 years old, and it's Notes on Aging. And there he talks about the still syndrome. And the still syndrome is something that was, he felt, afflicted by sort of like the near retiree. And they would come up to him, they say, "Huh, you're still exercising. Wow, you're still having a cocktail. Oh, you're still writing." And of course, his favorite one was, "I didn't realize it. You're still alive." And of course, he's writing, and he lived another 7 years. He wrote until, you know, he was 97 years old. And to a large extent, we're living in an exciting time. And I know people don't think about it that way, but the population 50 plus, 55 plus is rethinking and reimagining the second half of life. There's a lot of experimentation going out there, and experimentation can be very scary. But the thing is, we had this, as you mentioned, this very dire image of what it means to have an aging population. And there is this close association between aging and decline. And so, you know, my career has been set at two strands. One's been personal finance, one's economics. And personal finance has been about this baby boom generation, and they haven't saved enough for retirement. So when they retire, it's going to be terrible. Their standard of living is just going to fall. And in economics, it's been this, we're going to have more and more of these dependent elderly being supported by too few young people. As you mentioned, the dynamism of the economy goes down. And I just got suspicious about this. This doesn't make sense. And there is a vast body of research out there, scholarly research by economists, sociologists, psychologists, scholars of creativity. And what it says is that, you know what, if you're creative in your 20s, you're creative in your 60s. You're creative in your 30s, you'd be creative in your 70s. And, that really the issue becomes, how do we create opportunities for people to stay engaged in our economy, in our society, rather than saying, when are you going to retire? At based on some sort of arbitrary date. And so I think this is one of the more exciting aspects of our economy. It's about making this economy more inclusive. And if you look at job growth and you look at entrepreneurship, a lot of what is driving this economy forward are people 50 years and over. And it's time as a society that we abandon the ageism, we abandon the still syndrome, and we say, okay, we don't want to force you to work. Because, some people have to retire. Some people can't continue to work.
Absolutely.
But we want to create incentives for you to stay engaged in this economy, to be an employee, because you have a lot to offer. And I think that is that's a change in our society to embrace.
You know, it's interesting. Gary Vee, he's a Jersey guy. You're from Pennsylvania, right?
I'm here in Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay. Yep. So this Gary Vee, he his dad owns a liquor store, and he started working at a liquor store. Turned around. Well, now he's a angel investor. So he he's a venture capitalist and gives money away, and he's a bazillionaire and super cool guy. And he does this podcast, and the kids watch him too, which I kind of like, Chris, because again it expands their perspective. He's probably in his mid-40s, and he curses, so the kids like him, right? Because he uses the F-bomb and stuff. It's very funny. But anyway, this Gary Vee guy, one of the episodes he talked about, he loves giving money to the 50-plus entrepreneur. He said, because you guys are freaking brilliant. You have all of this experience. You've lived through life. You know what works, what doesn't. He said, so for him, his money is actually safer with the 50-plus. And he said, so what's happening, though, you hear people in their 50s, and you kind of alluded to this, saying, when I retire, he's a why are you retiring? He said, you should be scaling up at that point, not slowing down. And it's exactly what you're saying. And I happen to love that podcast because, again, being late in my 50s, I think I'm not ready to retire. I'm not even thinking about that. I got a lot more to do. I've got a lot more to give out there. And I don't think I'm unique, Chris. I don't.
Well, that's the thing. And, there have been over the years these stories of extraordinary people, running a marathon at 100 years old. And, we think about that. Okay, yes, there are extraordinary people. There always are. But this is actually fairly normal, what I'm describing. Because if you think about it, we're better educated than before. Yeah. We're healthier than before. So a 65-year-old today has about the health of a 55-year-old a generation ago. And we've also, there are changes in our economy. I mean, look what we're doing. We were having this conversation. We're on Skype. And so a lot of our economy is in the social services, the information technology, education, healthcare. It'd be one thing if we were having this conversation and what was considered a job was being on the assembly line or mining for coal. But today, it's people who are going, maybe worked in a hospital. Now they're working in a medical diagnostics office. Or they were a machinist, and now they're teaching the younger generation how to be machinists. They become instructors. They become teachers. And so the changes in our economy really also support this change. And here's the other thing so retirement was actually a great social advance. If you think up until after the Second World War, most people largely worked until they died. There was a couple of years of retirement, but most people couldn't afford to retire. Then we had Social Security in 1935. And then in the post-World War II era, you had Medicare. A lot of people were getting pensions, and we had a very strong economy. And so this notion of retirement came about for the first time in history, sort of a the average person could contemplate having several years ahead of them of embracing leisure. So this is a great thing. But now we're living longer. We're healthier. And the notion that you at some arbitrary age 60, age 62, age 65, that you would say goodbye to all your skills, all your knowledge, all your experience, and not tap into that again for the rest of your life, that's not attractive to people anymore, because we all want to be useful. And one way we'd be useful is, you know, we use our skills. And the thing is, people don't want to be working necessarily 40 hours pay, 50 hours work, right? No, you want some flexibility. You want to be doing maybe part-time. Sure. You might be self-employed. You know, it's people do different things. And the other change that has happened is that people need a paycheck, because I have to tell people, life is expensive. You know, kids are expensive, homes are expensive, college is expensive. And the notion that you're going to work 30, 35 years and you're going to be able to save enough to live off for another 20 to 30 years isn't realistic. And so that's why I call it purpose and a paycheck. You want, as you get older, you know, I'm at the age, you can see I have way hair here. So I'm at the age, and it's a very exciting thing where, you know, young college graduates will come to me and they'll say, can I have an informational interview? And the conversation will be, look, I know what a job is, but what is this career thing? And these are wonderful conversations, because they want to be financially independent, but they want to do something that they believe in, something that they feel good about, something that they're making this world a better place. And these are wonderful conversations, and I'm sure you have them too. And you encourage that, yes, you need to be financially independent, but don't abandon your idealism. Now I have a lot of conversations with people who are 60-something, informational interviews. It's the exact same conversation. It's about, I need to continue to earn money. I need to have that money coming in. But, you know, I'm at that stage of life where I want to be giving back. I want to be doing something that I feel proud about. And not everybody can achieve that, but that is a goal to work for. And so it's the exact same conversation. The only difference is that if you're a young person, time is infinity. You have forever ahead of you. If you're in your 60s or 70s, you do think time is precious and I need to, you know, make some steps now. But that is really, that's the conversation that we're having. And a lot of times I get this question, Chris, do people need to work, i.e. bad thing, or do they want to work? Okay, that's a good thing. And my answer is always the same. For most people, it's both. They need that paycheck. They need that income. But they also want to do something that they feel good about. And that is something to be applauded. And that is something to be encouraged.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, as you were speaking, I was thinking, my dad, immigrant, right, from Italy, came here in his 19 or 20 years old, brought his family over, the typical, you know, immigrant story. Right. And he was an engineer here in the United States. And so I want to say he was about 74 years old, Chris, and colleagues of his reached out to him and said, hey, we want to create this tape measure that when you pull it out, you know, if you've ever done handiwork around here, you know, you pull the tape measure, and if you're working alone, it tips over. So they said, we want it to come out, but hands free, you could mark and do what you have to do. So my dad's like, easy peasy, creates this model for it, right? They patent it, the whole thing. Nothing ever happens with it. Well, he's 89 years old now. Maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, Sears bought it, and then Craftsman bought it, and now it's out on the market. It's called the Sidewinder. So he received his little check. Of course, you know, God bless, my parents don't need the money, so he gave money to the grandkids, took us out. We had this wonderful dinner. He was in his 80s when he got paid for a patent. He did when he was 74. So everything you're describing for me, like retiring, and my father never, I mean, now obviously he's retired, right? He doesn't work, but he never stopped working, probably well into his 70s, because if someone called him and said, hey, John, can you create this? He was like, yeah. And he still had all the machinery downstairs to create the prototype for whatever it is that they were trying to bring to market. again, it's not like he lost that engineering mind and people knew his capacity and capability. So why wouldn't we continue to do what we're good at? And this is the other thing. My dad needs to use his brain, you know, his mind. Oh. It brought him pleasure. He was so proud. They patented it. You know, and then the patent got sold and, you know, we were telling everybody and he was embarrassed because he's a humble guy. We're like, you're freaking brilliant. You know, you're 80 something years old. Exactly. Selling a patent. I maybe because I was brought up with that mentality of entrepreneurship, but also keep rocking while you can, because you have the capacity and you certainly always want to create and give back. It's good for self when your brain is working like that, right?
Yeah, very much so. And part of it is also, you know, the underappreciated aspect of work is that it's a community, right? So mm-hmm. Some former colleagues or people knew who your dad was. They call him. They have conversations. You know, you have to answer that conversation. You got to think. And so about a big part of work is this is a community. People care whether you show up. You gossip. You have coffee. You dislike some people. You like some people. It's a community. And it's very important because many people find that when they retire – they don't have that large a community, and it's actually a lot of work to recreate new communities. And that can be a wonderful thing, but not to underestimate this community aspect of the workplace. Yes, it's an income, but it's also a community. And when they do these surveys of people who have fully retired, what do you most miss when you look back? You know, money is on that list, but it's not at the top of the list. What's at the top of the list of every single one of these surveys are colleagues, people, suppliers, vendors, the people that I talk to. And you're absolutely right. Part of, you know, it's very hard to separate. The people who are working longer, are those the healthier people? Or does working longer help keep you healthy? And what the research is really showing is that working longer can improve your health. For just the reason you got to get up in the morning, you got to get dressed, you got to brush your teeth, you know, take a shower, you got to get yourself to work, and then you got to learn a new piece of software, or you got to learn some sort of reorganization. And you just, oh my, but you're using your brain, you're talking to people. And so there can be real health benefits to work. Now, again, as I want to emphasize, many people don't want to be working full time anymore, and because they got other things to do, and that's a good thing. But they want to stay engaged and they need that money. But it's also there are the health benefits that come from staying engaged. Just as with your father, he's got these colleagues who turn to him. He shows them what he's doing. You get an interaction. You know, this is what keeps, Perro says, the little gray cells going in the Agatha Christie series.
Yes.
You keep those little gray cells going. That's a good thing.
Yeah. And it's so funny when you were saying that, I think working helps keep us young because you are using your brain and the synapses and all of that. Your brain, just like your body, is a muscle. We want to keep using the brain and do something. And I agree with you. I think some people are very much looking forward to retiring. Perhaps they never found their calling, or perhaps they're not, you know, charged up about whatever it is that they're doing for a living. And I get that. I totally get that. But if you love what you're doing and it's truly your purpose, like I know I'm living my purpose with what I do with my business and the people I engage, and I want to change the world. Like that to me is the core of who I am. I don't think that when I turn, and by the way, I don't even think about slowing down until 70. So for me, that's kind of the number where I would like to slow down a little bit. Right. That, to me, that's the number in my head. But I still will have to do something purposeful. And that's what you were describing, getting up, brushing your teeth, taking a shower. For females, maybe putting on a little bit of makeup. You have a purpose that you're getting up for to do something. And I think that keeps us thriving and healthy. I have another question. I know a lot of people are listening and thinking, oh, yeah, when they retire, they become the Walmart greeter, right, or the mall cop. Yeah. Because this is your world. You see people all the time. You talk about this all the time. What do you really see people in their, let's say, 60s and 70s after they choose to slow down? What do you find that they're – where are they landing?
You know, the thing about it's amazing how creative people are when it comes to jobs. And, you know, we have very narrow visions of what is a job. We automatically go to the greeter at the big box store if we're having a conversation about older people working, or you think about sitting in that cubicle or on that assembly line and just having to put in one more day and one more day. Mm-hmm. People are immensely creative. One woman that I interviewed, she retired and she does indexes for books, and she really likes doing that. So for the author pays her, she does the indexes. Another gentleman that I interviewed, he part-time waxes skis for the racers in Park City, Utah.
Cool.
Because he lives there. John Kerr, who is just a wonderful man, kind of an inspiration to all of us. He worked for 4 decades at WGBH. He retires at age 65. Quickly knew, like basically the next day, knew that he had to do something else. And he's kind of on an exploration, ends up out at Yellowstone, finds out about an internship program, applies, and the next year, and he gets it. So he's the world's oldest intern at Yellowstone, and he's talking to the guests on the Yellowstone about the wolf restoration program in the Lamar Valley. And then he applies and becomes a park ranger. And he's now in his early 80s. So, and I talked to him earlier last year. And so early 80s. So he's still a park ranger in Yellowstone from May through September. And then for family reasons, he goes back to New England for the rest of the year. And as he emphasized, he loves what he does. Of course he loves what he does. But he said, you know, that paycheck, it also helps to get that paycheck. So again, that's that purpose and a paycheck. But most of the jobs that people are going to be doing are in this sort of education, healthcare, services side of our economy.
Sure.
So here's one way to think about it very practically. There's this story out there about rejuvenation, right? You've been working in a cubicle all your life, and you go take a vacation nap in Napa Valley with a friend, and you're sitting there and you're drinking wine, and you spin a tale about how, you know, you could make this incredible, sustainable, organic wine, and these venture capitalists are sitting next to you, and they walk over and say, here's millions of dollars, go fulfill your vision, and you create this vineyard, and next thing you know, you're on the cover of magazines as, you know, Vintner of the Year or whatever. Okay, maybe that has happened. I doubt it, but okay, maybe it does happen. For most people, what they do, you take your skills, your knowledge, your experience, and then stop thinking about your job. But what is my skill set? What is it that I'm good at doing? And then what is it that I would like to do, right? And go on those informational interviews. But it's really, you take your skills and you put it in a different environment, because that's kind of fun, you know, different organizations, different people, you know, the excitement of a slightly different mission. And so this is what people are doing. They're taking their skills, oftentimes going to a different setting. And one of the advantages of going to a different setting, it's sometimes easier to be paid less, whereas in your old organization, getting paid less is kind of hard to accept. And the other thing off of what you're saying, and then I'll stop for a moment, but you know, what many people do, you mentioned, many people actually, about 40% of people who retire, I think that's the right number, 40% of people retire from a full-time job. Now, this is off a database, so you know, you're limited by your database, but sure, it's indicative. Who retire from a full-time job within 2 years go back to work. And what are they doing? They're taking that 2 years to taking a break. They're doing a little bit of their bucket list things. And they're thinking about, what do I want to do next? And, you know, they take a break from what they were doing. And sometimes it takes a period of time to figure out what you want to do next. So I applaud that. And what they have found is oftentimes they'll use the word, I'm retired. Not because they're retired, but it just kind of signals what stage of life they're in, but they actually go back to work.
So interesting. And as you were describing the gentleman who became the park ranger, he right. first got the internship. You saw the movie, The Intern.
Yeah.
I think it's called The Intern with Robert De Niro, right?
Right?
What a great show. I mean, what a great movie. But it speaks to this exact thing where he retired, the wife passes away, and he's thinking, this sucks. This is not what I want to do, man. And then he goes back and he helps this business owner take it to the next level, scale her business, become successful, even more successful than she had been, by tweaking that internal mechanics, because he was part of a business, all different parts of divisions, you know, through his regular career growing up. Yeah. It makes so much sense to me. And this is interesting, and I don't know if you hear this or your clients tell you they hear this, the people you work with. I hear all the time, like I'm writing this book now or I'm trying to create this new masterclass and stuff like that. People say to me, why? Like, you're going to be 58. Why? And I look at them and I go, why not? Like, why not would I do this? Why? Because I thought of it. I think it's a great idea. I have the energy to do it. I want to create. It excites me. Why wouldn't you? And I think this is another thing, and this is my question now. Do you hear that people hear from family or friends, whatever, why would you do that? What, you've worked your whole life. Why don't you sit back and just relax now? Your clients, the people you work with, do you hear that a lot? That people almost criticize them for wanting to do something?
Oh, yeah. People hear it all a lot. And they hear it in different ways. That they hear more from relatives or friends or, you know, people they know. One of the worst words in the English language is when someone goes for an interview or job interview, you're overqualified, which is another way of saying, you know, why would you want this job? And, you know, ageism is really real here in the United States. I mean, it's just there, and people have these sort of bizarre expectations, and you have to fight them. Now, the good news is, if you look at the labor force participation rate of people 55 and older, 60 and older, 65 and older, 75 and older, it's been going up since the early 1990s for everybody. And it's really quite striking. And as you mentioned in the introduction, more than a quarter of all new businesses are formed by the 55 to 64-year-old age group. So there is some movement. And in this tight labor market that we're in right now, I think there is a reevaluation of your experienced workers and the value that they bring to the company. But yes, a lot of this is people are having to do it on their own. Although there are organizations in so many parts of the country now, this is a grassroots movement and sort of helping you think to find a job. And I always go back to the practicalities of, you know, finding a job, because I think this is, and what the book does, I think this is really good for the economy. I think it's really good for our society. And we have these silos that are breaking down. So the silo is you go to school, you work really hard, you stop working, and you embrace full-time leisure. That's kind of been the model.
Yes.
But that's breaking down. It is completely breaking down. So now what you're seeing is that people are continuing to work well into those traditional retirement years. So a lot of times they want some education. They want some additional skills. Very slow to adopt. Some of them are starting to, though. Community colleges in particular are very responsive to their local community.
Absolutely.
And so I think what we're seeing is in my youngest is 27 years old. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, he's 27 years old. When he is 50, he's going to have a very different view of the second half of life than I did when I was 50, right? Because he will think nothing about going back to college and university for a period of time to get some sort of certificate. And the college and university is going to be offering those kind of certificates.
Definitely.
So the older person coming into a college or university isn't just going to be going to the Renaissance history class that you never took when you were younger, which, by the way, those classes are wonderful. They're great. They're engaging.
Sure.
But you're going to take that Renaissance history class, but they're also going to come back because I never quite learned whatever is going to be Excel in 20 years, you know, and they're going to learn that program, or they're going to, you know, be able to learn how to do some sort of fundraising, or they're going to, you know, they're going to learn something. And so we're breaking down these silos, which means through the course of your career, there's going to be a lot more change. Sometimes you're working for a for-profit, sometimes for a not-for-profit,
sure.
Sometimes, you know, self-employed. And I think this is exciting, but it's a period of experimentation. And what's hard is that, you know, just as you're describing, society's putting a lot of limits on people. And also, we put limits on ourselves. We kind of think, well, I'm getting to be 60.
Sure.
When should I retire? Instead of saying, yeah, you know, I'm getting to be 60. I've been doing this for a while. What do we want to do next? And I think that's the question of our age.
Yeah, and that goes back to my quote, right? We put the limitations on ourselves. And I I find that sad. I just find that sad. And maybe I think, like, a bigger picture, that's who I am. I zoom out. I could see things from a big scale. I'm not good with the detail. But maybe because of my dad and the way I was raised and the way he lived his life, you know, you see, it's learned behavior, that to me, it right. was never limit yourself. It was always be the best you could be. Whatever you want to do, do. Go and do it. Just be the best at it. And that's how I was raised. So I was never raised to say, well, you could never do that. Do you want to do it? And then if you want it bad enough, you probably could figure it out. I mean, I would, could never be a brain surgeon, but I never had the desire to do that either. Right. And the other thing I wanted to comment on, I know my local community college, if you're, it's probably like 60 and older. It might be a little bit lower. I don't know. But they allow senior citizens, quote unquote, go back without paying. They offer it free as a, you know, community thing. So there's right. a lot of local colleges, you know, the two-year colleges that are offering all these wonderful classes, and it's free yeah. to senior citizens. So why wouldn't you go and expand your knowledge? I have to ask you this. Have you, and maybe you haven't met people because it's not what you're looking for, but I have friends who have worked whatever they've worked, you know, in their careers. It's more of a job. The ones who I'm talking about, it's a job, not a career, where right. I'll talk to them and they say, oh, I have 5 years. I'm 55, 60. I'm out. I get a full pension, or most of them will have a pension. They work for the government right. or something. And Chris, I sit there and think, like, I go, really? Like, to me, this is such an anomaly of thinking. But there are people out there who are looking forward to just saying, I'm done, and move on, right? You're probably a big right. population.
And for some people, what many people find is that they're done, they retire, and like I said, a year or two later, they find themselves
yes.
coming back to do something different. Now, often what people are doing, you can call it different things, like an encore career or a next chapter. So let's say you were working for a big electric utility, or you're working for the government, and you've retired and you do have a pension, so you have a safety net there. But you start thinking, you know, I want to do something. Maybe I'm going to go to the nonprofit sector, you know, because you have this notion about giving back.
Absolutely.
And I think this is great. So if that's you, put on your volunteer hat, but now you're going to go to an organization. You're going to go volunteer in an organization. You're going to believe in their cause, but ask yourself a slightly different question. Not only do you believe in the cause, but would you want to work for these people? Because you can believe in the cause and the organization can be good, but they're not the kind of people that you want to be working with. You don't like the way it's managed, or you don't think they treat their employees well. But there might be, you go to one and they're like, they treat their employees well. This is good management. I like the cause, and I could do that job. And then if it turns out that the job's not available to you, you've met some new people and you say, well, okay, you don't have the job here for me, but do you know anybody in this sort of nonprofit community that we're talking that is looking for somebody? So I think, you know, there are ways to, and again, you're selling whatever skill you had at that electric utility or that hospital or yeah. that government agency, and you're selling that skill, not saying, you know, I was public relations, but I am a communicator and I know how to talk in the community and I know how to engage people, whatever it is going to be your particular skill. And so this is why I think it's such a broader discussion about what is it you can do. And so I don't know what the data will be. It'd be intriguing to follow some of the people that you're talking about, but there's going to be a substantial number of them are going to want to do something.
I agree.
And even if you have a pension, it's nice to bring in a little bit of extra money. And one group, just as a across the board, that in terms of the sort of encore career that I have found, are K-12 teachers. They retire. Now, typically, when they retire, it's time for them to retire. I mean, they've been doing this, time to move on. But they have a pension, but they're smart. They're well-educated. They're engaged. They were teachers for a long period of time. And so that's one of the more exciting groups, I think, in this whole area of sort of thinking about encore careers, continuing to contribute to society. It's teachers. But they have exactly the situation that you have. Many teachers reach that point where time for me to retire, time for me to move on. But they often ask themselves, what do I want to do next?
Yeah. I have an aunt who retired, school teacher. It's so funny. She's going to be 80, I think, this year. And she still teaches at the local community college, whatever she's teaching. And she loves it. She loves it. And the kids respond to her because, you know, she could be goofy and all of those things because she was a school teacher for all those. You don't lose that personality, right? But that's exactly what she's doing. We're out of time, but I just want, I have one more question. With your book, Purpose and Paycheck, first of all, I think anybody who definitely is in the last leg of life, like us, right, in their 50s, starting in their 50s, read the book because it really, you give wonderful insight into ideas. And you just tapped on networking. Even if you don't want to work for that organization, but you get to know the people, you're building your network, that community that we talked about at the beginning of the show. And I think we kind of just went full circle, which was kind of cool. But again, how do we build this new network to branch out to things that we want to do, not because we have to do it anymore because I have a kid in college, whatever it might be. So what would you like people listening and after reading the book, what do you want their takeaway to be? And I'm not just talking about 50s and older. I'm talking about any age group that reads this book. Yeah.
So on the practical level, and this is for any age group, when you're at that stage, when you're thinking about what's next, mm-hmm. whether you're in your 30s or you're in your 50s or you're in your 60s, it's a key question. Transitions are always hard, and transitions always take longer than we'd like them to take.
Sure.
The most valuable asset, particularly as you get older, your most valuable asset is your network, as you mentioned. And the thing about your network is your network's going to help you in two ways. One is your network is going to help you figure out what is it that you're good at. What is it that you might want to do next? And so when people say, I don't know what I want to do, that's okay. Or I don't want to be doing what I'm doing. Perfectly fine. But tap into this network. And a lot of people don't think about use that term, right? But it's your friends, colleagues, former colleagues, people at the church or temple, your former college roommate. Call up your college roommate if you went to college and ask them, what did I say I wanted to do during those midnight discussions we were having about how we were going to change the world, right? So your network will help you think through what is your skills, what you're good at, and help you think through what do I want to do next. Now, here's the other thing. Your network is also going to get you the interviews that will lead to that job, because more than 50% of all jobs come through a referral anyway. A lot of times it's third, fourth degree of separation. I think as you get older, you can actually increase that number. It's a lot higher. It becomes more difficult to go through the human resources department. It becomes more difficult to go through the normal channels. You do it through your network. So your network is incredibly invaluable. So if you take nothing else from this conversation, take that.
Absolutely.
The second thing is, what I want people to take away is that there are all these opportunities that are being created with the aging of the population. So when someone starts giving you a dire dirge about all these old people and how we can't afford all these old people, don't let them get away with it. Push back. It's about creating opportunities for people to continue to contribute to our society, part-time, full-time, helping out with the grandkids, whatever it is, that there is a lot here to be contributed. Older people are not a burden. They're an opportunity. And they have judgment, they have experience, and they have creativity, and they can be productive. They have so much to offer. So those are the two things. One's on the practical. One is more on the conceptual or the broader picture. But those are two things to take away.
I agree. And it's funny, almost 58 years old, I still call my dad. Hey, Dad, this is going on in the house, because an engineer. I was thinking about because he reads all the time. Have you read anything on, doing a patio versus blocks, whatever it is? Right. I still go to him as a confidant and as a resource, because he's still freaking brilliant at 89 years old. So we have to be slow to push people out to pasture, because we really do have a lot of relevant information within us. And and the younger generation really needs to tap into that as well. Chris, thank you so much. We're out of time, but I do want to give the name of the book again is Purpose for purpose and a paycheck. Again, just like we discussed, yes, we want to have purpose, but that money is always a nice thing. It's always a nice little secondary.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So if you're interested, find out more about Chris, the book, all of the things, go to his website. It's chrisfarrell.net, and it's chrisfarrell.net. I will post that on the Enlightenment of Change Web Talk Radio website. People commute with us, Chris. So when they get back to their office, they could just go find the link and get the book and find Chris. Guys, my partner and I are still offering our free communication style assessment on wisdomdecoded.com right on the landing page. And you get your little report, tells you about your strengths, tells you about your little blind spots. And it really helps, I think, it helps you focus on what are my strengths, just like we're talking about today, but what are my strengths specifically with my communication skills and where do I have blind spots that maybe I need to either be aware of or develop. So check that out again at wisdomdecoded.com. Chris, thank you so much. The book's amazing.
Thank you.
I think everybody should read it. And what we talked about right at the end, the network. Network. It for the young and for, you know, people in the last leg of life like us, our network is really important to our sustainability, I think. So thank you so much for all of your insight and for the writing the book. Just amazing. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Oh, real pleasure. This is a lot of fun. Good. I guess because of my age group, too, it's very timely. So I certainly enjoyed it. I hope you guys will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together how to challenge and grow our skills. In this case, talking specifically about skills. But change is inevitable. Deal with it. Grow with it. Challenge yourself and make things happen as possible. And I do hope that my show brings you guests like Chris, who have these wonderful books out there, these wonderful tools and resources, as well as my communication style assessment, The Conversation. It's all a resource for you to figure out how to navigate this life of change and do it hopefully with grace and ease and maybe being inspired along the way. So again, thank you so much for joining me. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman on webtalkradio.net. Thank you again to my guest, and I wish you all a wonderful and inspired week. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman and Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, whitmanassoc.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.